A Thousand Lives Lived podcast. The podcast where a thousand lives come to life. Where mysterious creatures take flight. Where the blind lead and where space is transversible. A place where the imagination is unleashed. Anything can happen. Hi, friends. And today we're going to be talking about the book, The Gamma Recruits, a book one in Countdown to Epsilon. So it is a sci-fi book by James Palkmans. James is a Canadian writer. Woohoo.
Yay! Good job,
Canadian writers. He grew up in rural Canada, and he has a educational background in aerospace engineering, which I think very likely came in handy when writing this book.
Yes.
So he has a very interesting history, having lived in Italy for a few years, and then he spent some time in Washington as well. But I believe he's back living in Canada and working plus writing. So we'll hear more from him while we do our author interview. That's going to be airing next week, so do be sure to check that out. But today we're going to be mostly focusing on doing our book review. So Tamara, did you want to do a little synopsis in your own words?
Sure. And it's a bit of a long book, so I hope I can do it justice in a concise way. Yeah, so we start out and we're in the head of Jason, who is from your area of Canada. And he is being recruited for a job. He's flown to Hawaii for a job. And it sounds interesting. He's not very committed to it. He's just like, well, let's see what this does. And he goes into the job interview, and the guy is an asshole. He's like, confronts him and all this kind of stuff. You find out later that he's doing it on purpose, because the job that he's interviewing for, that he actually doesn't know anything about, is actually a very high stress job. And so that was actually calculated. But anyway, he says, no way, man, you know, I'm not going to take this job. And then he goes back, but he's in Hawaii and he was on a private jet. And this company is owned by the richest man in the world, who owns Hitsit, which is a social media platform that everybody uses. It runs all the data of the world. It's basically Facebook and Twitter and Amazon combined. And Camaras, I think that's his name, is the guy who owns it. And he's the one that's financing this. Jason with a Y, as they say, decides he's not going to take the job. And in the meantime, we flip over to this other guy who's this really intense survivalist. He had his own survivalist show for a while. Anyway, he's in this weird place defending this island. He's obviously this kick-ass killer. It just seems to come out of left field. But we do find out eventually that he had his own survivalist show, and he was accused of killing his wife, who he loved very, very much, Lenora. And then he went and killed the people that he supposedly possibly killed his wife. And then, I mean, all these things. And then he gets mysteriously just disappears and is off the hook. And then we find him involved in this program. Come to find out, this program in Hawaii is this huge thing with all these different scientists. Samara is one of the other major players, who is a social, I can't remember exactly what her title is, but she understands the games people play with each other and sort of how to influence people online. So that's why she's there. There's a guy named Adair, was that his name? Who ends up being her love interest, who we find out has a secret life. Pretty soon we find out that there's a whole bunch of military people involved in this project, and they're going undercover and pretending to be scientists, sort of security and scientists. We start reading about the development of the project, and you start hearing it from both sides. You hear it from the participant side, Jason and Samara's, and then you start hearing it from the people who are operating it, particularly the one guy who was the asshole in the interview. We're in his head a lot. And this is a secret program that plays with the time-space continuum, basically. There are parallel universes, and they are able to predict what's going to happen in this universe by modeling it in other universes. And then using that data that comes back from that to find the best way to approach this in order for the best outcome. And so they've been using that on their Hitsit company. Global warming is a really bad thing, and it's even worse than it is now for us. And so what they want to do is we're not quite sure the long-term purpose, and even at the end of the book, we're not sure, but they want to send a group of people, the Gamma Recruits, to an alternate universe. Was it 1127? I can't remember the exact date. 1127 in our past, in a different timeline, to set up a more ideal future for humanity. And by the end, you realize that that ideal future is actually for Mr. Kamaras more than it is anything else. But anyway, so these are the Gamma recruits. They're basically tricked using this particular technology into agreeing to do this. And then as they're going through the gate into this alternate timeline, Samara has realized something's up and she doesn't trust it. And so she doesn't trust the guy who's now her boyfriend, Aiden. And so she does something that hopefully he'll stay behind. He's actually one of the military people. She wants him to miss the window. But in the process of that, he does come through and gets his brain fried and immediately dies. So she feels both guilty and also didn't want him there. So anyway, so they're in their new timeline and they're in Hawaii. And I don't know that much history about Hawaii, but there was a bunch of wars between different groups of Native Hawaiians at this time. And so they end up on this island and there's nobody there. And then you realize why the guy at the very first, the military guy, was there. He was clearing the island for them. He killed everybody and then made all the people from the other islands believe that this island had demons on it. And he actually gave them plague and stuff. It was really awful. And so they're on this and they're trying to get things set up. And then the military people basically just start ignoring. Before, they were all very romantic and stuff with the scientists. But now that they're there, they don't have to pretend anymore. So they end up going off on a mission to China, I think, because they're going to do all these machinations that Kamaras wants them to do. And there's just a couple of military people left. The scientists start suspecting something is up. And so they start talking. And eventually, a warrior washes up on the beach who has wounded in his leg severely. And so their doctor helps save him. They amputate his leg. His name is Kai. And they described him as a very buff Jason Momoa. And so anyway, it all culminates in they have to subdue some of their own military people, and then they have to fight and then some of the military people come over to their side, and they have to fight against the enemy native forces while trying to bring some of their Kai's own people over to join them. And at the very end, they're intermarrying and they're together, Kai's people and the scientists. Samara ends up fairly quickly seducing Kai, and Kai's on board for it, and they end up having the first interracial child on the island there. So, wow. And it's Oahu, I think, is the island they're set on. So anyway, but then it's set up for the second book, you can tell.
Wow. That's quite the plot. I can see why the book needs to be so long.
Yes. Right? Yes. Oh my gosh. He writes it. I mean, his pacing at the very first, I thought his pacing was slow because I was like, what is this about? What's going to happen? Because we're going back and forth between Jason and Juan, I think his name is. And it's like, how are these connected? This seems, usually you have some indication before the first five chapters as to where it's going. And I was totally like, I have no idea where this is going. And it's a very, I mean, he's a really great writer, and it's a very regular pace, kind of slow, probably too slow for some people. This could be a thriller, but it's not paced like a thriller in the writing. And so I think some people would be frustrated by that. It took a while to get going.
Right. So yeah, we're talking our first category here. So that's writing style. So we might as well just jump right into that. Okay. So you were talking about flow. Did the book flow well with appropriate structural integrity, transitions seen in chapter endings, et cetera, et cetera? What did you think overall for flow?
Oh my gosh. You know, at the very beginning, I was like, you know, this character Juan is interesting, but I don't think he has anything to do with the book. I mean, he obviously must because he's in the book, but I'm like, I'm waiting to see whether this pays off. And I think it really, really does, because then you realize they end up finding his compass in the end sections with two Lenora, his wife, who he apparently killed or didn't kill, or it was all very confusing. So that paid off. And I was like, I think it probably will. But at the beginning, I was like, oh, no. Like I say, I think it flowed well. It's pacing.
Once it
was
got
just,
going, right?
It was the same pace throughout, which was a very steady, very developed lots of interesting, but it was not like Dan Brown. You know, Dan Brown, he's amazing because it's like reading literary crack in that he can give you these huge info dumps, but you're so focused on this amazing, really exciting story that you just have to get back to the story. So you endure the info dumps in order to get back to the amazing story.
Right.
This one, it was eked out to you very slowly. And you got to find out about this person and that person. And you were in a bunch of different points of view. And you were, you know, you're inching your way forward. And about the time something would develop in one area, you'd flip back over to the antagonist's point of view and you'd be developing. In fact, you could see him developing the next book, which is Epsilon something or another. I say it flowed really well, but it was pace-wise, it was really slow. Right. And if you're in a hurry, it might not be to your liking. But
right.
I thought it was great.
Okay, so you're talking about point of views. How do you mm-hmm. think he did with the point of views?
I think it was great. I think that no time, I thought you get handed off easily. You're in somebody's head. I mean, I think you know where you are. I think you need this many point of views in this type of a book because you wouldn't have the information that you needed if you didn't. But something that was interesting to me. So the science, his ability to explain science is unparalleled. I mean, he's amazing at explaining the scientific principles behind what's going on. And we can get into that in a bit. You know how you have dimensions of people. You have something that's like literary and very character-based. You're in this person's head and you understand their motivations. And they're doing surprising things because it's much more realistic than it is like a caricature. And then you have books that, you know, people are just basically devices to get the plot forward and they're cardboard right. cutouts and the women often wear very skinny clothes and like get rescued a lot. and this was in the middle. I mean, the people were believable, but they were believable in that way that a lot of thriller books are. I mean, you have a tragic backstory and you have some depth. I mean, they were closer to the literary side than they were the thriller side, but they were, I have a preference for literary. So I would have liked a little bit more like, I don't know exactly. They were a little superficial, I guess, but I liked them. I mean, even the bad guys I liked. So from an interesting point of view, you know, but I think that that's the way a lot of books, especially books like this, write people. I mean, he gave them lots of good backstory. You learn about their backstory. You learn about their relationships to their families. You learn about their families. I mean, but there was something just a little bit, I feel like Jason and Samara basically were the same person. Just different aspects of the same person. But that did not take it away from it for me, except for a few specific instances when we will talk about when we get to science.
Right. I was going to say, I thought that the characters that he came up with were relatively different.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Say more.
I thought that in the different point of views, he had different voices, which is
great.
So that's part of doing point of view well.
Right. You'll have to pardon us. We both have colds, recovering from colds, COVID, all that kind of stuff. And so we're a little bit, we're coughing and stuff like that. So yeah.
Ooh, I'll have little coughing bouts here, but
yeah.
Ooh, okay.
So on this point, you may find it as shown from our differing points of view, you may find it that they're just exactly your cup of tea and they seem like totally. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. I thought that the character development was really good. And then I liked the variety of backstories.
One way to describe it, come to think of it, is you know how deep you go into a person. Different writers go different depths into a person. You know, you can have like a omniscient narrator, you can have a close third narrator, you can have an internal narrator, you can have like the authorial voice behind the internal narrator talking through the internal narrator. And in this case, I think the point of view was close third in its truest sense. And my preferred place is inside a person, which is internal close third or something. I don't know. I don't even know if it has a term.
Internal close third,
where you're like in their head much more so than you are outside. But I don't know that you could do that in a book like this. I don't know. Anyway.
I think that if you did, it's, I think that the challenge with a book like this is that there's so much plot and so much to explain that if you were to stay inside the heads, like to a close degree, it would have been even more like double the pages. Right. Yes. So like providing more depth, more character development, more depth, more like world descriptions, that requires more words, obviously. Right. So,
yeah.
And it also, you're right. If you're not good at balancing it, it just slows it down even more. So
yeah.
Like it is a challenge. It's like, okay, so you've got all this plot to go through and explain well, and you know where you start and where you finish. And so you need to get there in a relatively, you know, organized manner. So I think that given he did a pretty good job of using the voices
and some of the experiments writers have done to try and bridge those time gaps, I find fascinating. There is an absolutely fascinating portion in To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, where she has to span a whole bunch of years. And she does it by describing what happens inside a house, an abandoned house, and how the vines come up through the floor. And I mean, it's amazing. I mean, that obviously is not applicable here, but I mean, I just, the experiments that writers do with time is just amazing to me.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be like just the visual representation of time.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So I think that we did a pretty good job of talking about writing style. So we're going to head right into character development, which we were sort of talking about, but we'll
I think we covered that. I think we did.
Okay. So we'll move on to world building.
World building. I got stuff to say about world building.
Okay. So, okay. First question. The world that the writer has created is well thought out and makes sense. Yes.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, he's one of those people who are really able to talk about science in a way, really, really difficult subjects. And he makes it look deceptively easy because he's talking about superposition in quantum computing. He's talking about multiverses. He's talking about all this kind of stuff. And you can tell he's not only an aerospace engineer, he's also someone who explains it well. He understands it and he's able to explain it. For instance, so a regular computer has basically one or zero, right? It has an on and an off. And that's how everything that we do is just all these little, you know, millions and millions of little tiny switches going on and off, finding different ways to have these two on and these two off. And that means this thing combined with these over here, which are on, off, which come together to mean the letter A, you know, or whatever. So that's all computers are just a series of switches stuck together to represent our world in various different ways. And so a quantum computer, it's not on off, it's not zero one. You have the possibility of having millions of different ways to get meaning out of it. So rather than a bit only being on and off, you can have a bit be in different, they call it superposition, but it's in like different positions. So instead of one switch only having two bits of meaning, a switch can have hundreds, or I don't remember exactly, it's been a while, but lots and lots of bits of meaning. And it has to do with the fact that you not only have the on and the off, you have a position in, think of a musical scale. You can, you know, you have different notes. So you have on, off, in addition to a position on a musical note. And that's kind of what superposition is. So if you do the calculations, and I don't remember anymore what they are, that possibility is each bit has the possibility of having like hundreds of different meanings, different settings. And plus being like super, super fast, it allows you all the encryption as we know today, as soon as quantum computers come into effect, will be breakable within seconds, within milliseconds. I don't know. And so people are in the process of developing new encryption because quantum computers are just going to blow it out of the water. Anyway, his description, he doesn't go into all that particularly, but he does a really good job of explaining that. And also, he has a scientist character who's obviously on the spectrum. He lives with his mom. His mom drives him to work. His mom got him the job. It's just really great. But he's also brilliant. And you watch him while he develops this particular theory of multiverses, and they develop a way to go between multiverses. And he explains the science behind it, and he does a really great job, I think, without making it too complex, but makes it understandable. Yeah, and so that is one of his strengths. There are parts of world building, however, just like with what was the last book we talked about, that I found holes in the plot that I had a hard time getting past as I was reading. So being a woman and having had kids, would you go back to the world 1127 with the intent of having kids in 1127? That is risking, no. That is, yeah, I know, right? And so you can tell that maybe this the author hadn't thought very much about that. They send a baby doctor back, but you know, not a lot of medicine. I mean, it's like, no, if I was a woman, I am a woman, I would not go back to 1127 to have kids at all. No. I mean, it's played off kind of in the same way that a lot of sci-fi, especially early sci-fi, you know, playful, they're having sex and it's fun and they're pairing off and you know they're gonna have kids and they have kids and it's great, you know. But no, in reality,
yeah, no, it's woman like in their right mind would 50-50 chance of dying, right?
Yes, yeah, and yeah. Probably in 1127 it was probably more like 2080 or something like that,
maybe. Yeah.
And then another thing was they did not send they keep pointing out the fact that he's just a baby doctor, he doesn't know about injuries. You would go back to 1127 without sending a trauma doctor with you? No, I don't think so. Especially knowing that they were in a military situation and they were going to be fighting. And there were some other things like that were just like total holes in the plot that I had a hard time getting past, where I was like, yeah, no, I don't think so. But I was able to enjoy the story so much that for the most part, I was able to let those go.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
okay. But I do like, okay, on the plus side, I do like Kai. This is actually the character development part that I love. So this book is very much about understanding other people. I mean, you can tell that the author very much has thought a lot about organizational management and about influencing people and about psychology and all sociology and all that kind of stuff, which is something that I'm very interested in as well, because he talks about the science behind it a lot. But he very explicitly is talking a lot about how we other people. And one of the points he makes is that Kai, the warrior, you know, we have a tendency to infantilize and naively place our ancestors as being dumber than we are, as being, you know, all these lesser than things than we are. Our ancestors were just as smart as we are. They had just, and the book makes the point that if you took the kids of 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and brought them up in our current society, they would do fine. They would be our scientists and engineers. And one of the things he does is he makes Kai his warrior, even though he can't speak. They speak through a translator on a tablet, but even though he can't speak our language, they don't make him dumb. He's just as smart as everybody else, and he gets things quickly, and he's suitably suspicious, but he's also human. And so I think they do a great job of that, of not, he does a great job of writing the Native Hawaiian characters just as realistically as he does everybody else, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I don't think I've ever, well, I personally don't think I've read a book that does that. I think mm-hmm. that most authors would highlight they're like the intrigue and they're like mm-hmm. concern about like using a tablet to translate in 1167. That's like, wow.
Yeah. And this was one of the things that I was like, as they were trying to coerce these recruits before they went back into agreeing to do this, is they one of the characters was named Kailani. And she was an expert in Polynesian languages. She's from Hawaii and she was Hawaiian languages. She was an expert in Hawaiian languages that was studying, they don't have any written records, obviously, of what the language would be in 1127 in Hawaii. It was all oral tradition. And so she extrapolated using AI backwards to what the language might be like. So that's a dead giveaway that the higher ups presented it as if, oh no, we've come to this surprise conclusion and this might save the day. We just came across this idea, when they had this idea all the way along. Well, by the very fact that Kailani is there, Samara knows that they were doing, that was their intent all along, because she wouldn't be there if they hadn't known they were going to jump back to 1127. And in fact, I'm saying 1127, I think that's what it was. They say that when they get on the island, they start seeing that there was probably a previous expedition that came and like killed off all the natives. And that was one, but I think there might've been another group that came before, because Alpha, Beta, Gamma, that's how the Greek alphabet goes. So the third letter in the alphabet is Gamma. And so there had to have been an Alpha and a Beta that did not survive or is no longer there. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So that's a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I love the world building. I did, particularly being a science geek. This is science crack, because it's all about the stuff that I am very interested in and stuff. So, yeah. And there's something about having a group. The Expanse does this as well. And some other books do this. And Star Trek too does this. There's something really great about having a society of scientists in a book. I love it, because they have the human elements too, but they tend to have like a higher purpose, and they tend to be very smart, and they tend to be talking about things that I'm really interested in. And so I love, one of my wheelhouses, as Reading Glasses would say, Reading Glasses, the podcast, has this thing about your wheelhouse. And they're like, not just the genres you're interested, but the particular setups you're interested in. So one of my wheelhouses is group of scientists working on a problem together. Do you have wheelhouses?
I like time travel.
Okay.
Yes. So, I mean, that part of the book is definitely a draw for me. Like, and I like history. So the going back in time, going forward in time, they're both interesting to me. But like back in time is, especially for films, is like, yes, I will watch that. I don't care what else it's about. I'm going to watch that.
So did I mention Timeline to you? I think I did. That thriller by Michael Crichton. This actually reminded me of it. There's a book called Timeline that my brother suggested I read, by Michael Crichton, and it's kind of the same setup: group of scientists going back to medieval times in England, and sort of like what that's like. And the plot is driven by the fact that if you jump in time enough, your atoms, your molecules start to fracture and you start to go crazy. Mm. And so the antagonist goes crazy. But
isn't there a movie? Really good book. Isn't there a movie?
I think they made it
that?
Into a movie. I haven't seen the movie, but I think they did make it into a
I've
movie.
I've watched a movie that sounds similar, except that they go back to France. And yeah, like people get injured going back and forth too many times. Mm. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course I loved that, because I mean, mm-hmm. it had to do with time travel, medieval stuff.
Yes.
Yep, I'm on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm well, game for that.
You feel if you need something else to read, read the original Timeline book. It's really good. So.
Yeah, cool. There we go. Okay, so our very last section is always overall reading experience. So when we are determining the book's overall reading experience score, we take off our editorial and professional writer's hats and put on the everyday reader hat. So Tamara, you don't have to give an actual score.
Just I'm really bad. Right. I'm like, 10, give it a 10. All of them 10s.
It's just a matter of like, as a everyday reader, was it enjoyable?
Absolutely. I would recommend this one to anybody. Especially science geeks, especially time travel geeks. I really enjoyed it. I mean, like I said, the promise that it offers seems to contradict itself in that it wants to be both a thriller and not a thriller. And so some people might find the pacing slow, but I like slow pacing. And I have to admit, I was a little rushed finishing it, although I slowed down and finished it slowly anyway, because I was enjoying it so much, but because it is a bit long, but it doesn't feel long. unless you're on deadline.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that he is writing book two. That book two would be faster because he's set up enough things now that book two has the possibility.
Do you think, maybe this is his writing style. Maybe this pace is what's comfortable for him. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I guess we'll see, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're interviewing him?
Yes. We're in the process of interviewing him, and that will be posted 1 week from today.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure to read over The Gamma Recruits by James Palkman. And be sure to listen to our author interview with James. That will be next week. And do grab your copy. It's available on Amazon.com, .ca, and probably all the other dots.
Yes, absolutely. A great book. You should pick it up.
And we will be continuing our book review series probably after Christmas now. So we'll be taking, I think it's a 3-week break at Christmas.
Right.
So this will be our last book until the new year, but we look forward to doing some more books in the new year. So check those out. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to our channel. We've got some great shows coming up with amazing practical advice for writers, and for the bookworms, fun features on new and exciting books soon to be released. You don't want to miss out. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for all the updates. And if you'd like to be on our show, pitch us your idea on any of our pages. Until next time, keep writing, keep reading, and you'll live 1,000 lives.